Golf Smarter number 87 for August 14, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The best way to gauge your yardage with Matt Anderson of Franklin Canyon.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks to those of you who continue to send your emails about your favorite golf course and your playing partners who also listen to the Golf Smarter podcast. Please keep them coming, because today's shout-out is to Michelle Muyen, who says, "My playing partners and I listen to every episode of the Golf Smarter and Golf Better podcasts. Please say hi to my Fab Four, F-O-R-E, playing partners, Sander and Remco. We do not have a home course, but try to play as many different courses as possible. Although we all live in the Netherlands, we regularly plan trips to enjoy courses in different countries, like Pebble Beach last year and the Old Course next year." Today's show is about GPS systems. I had the opportunity to check out the new iGolf SD GPS system for smartphones and compare it to the SkyCaddy SG2. We'll talk with Matt Anderson, general manager of Franklin Canyon Golf Course, about various range distance systems and his course, which has limited yardage markers. And we'll get some extra time today with Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf to answer your questions. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you giving me some time out here on your course. We're at Franklin Canyon Golf Course in Hercules, California. Give me an overview of your course.
We are located in the canyon between Concord and Richmond off of Highway 4. It's a beautiful setting, no homes on the golf course, a lot of giant trees and some ponds, and just a kind of a perfect setting for a golf course. We do have 18 holes, a full driving range. We're open every day of the year, sun up to sundown.
Give me an overview of the playability of your course.
We have a lot of rolling hills. There's quite a big elevation change in the back nine. Mainly it's pretty straightforward. It's not a link style, a lot of tree lined fairways, plenty of bunkers. As I said before, some water comes into play.
Bunch of uneven lies as well.
Not a whole lot. It's mainly just uphill and downhill, not the side hill lies that people struggle with. So, it's not a hard golf course, but it's, when I play, I use every club in my bag, and that's kind of my judge of a good golf course. So, it's a fun time.
Typical Northern California golf course?
Definitely, yep. Poa greens, beautiful lush fairways. Great. We have a great superintendent. He actually spent a year at Augusta National as an intern, so he knows what looks right, and he's taken care of this golf course. He's really turned it around the last couple of years. He's been here for just over a year now, and the course is just in awesome shape.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm excited to go out and play. The course is not a muni, but it's not a resort course. You're managed by American Golf. What's it like to work for them? Because they seem to have a certain type of golf course that they manage. How is it, you know, it's very affordable for a Northern California course as well. What's it like for, you know, working with them?
American Golf is a great, great company to work for. They really take care of their employees, and they do put a lot of money back into the courses that they manage. There's kind of this dissension among the public when they know that American Golf is managing the facility, but it's been a great experience for me, and they put a lot of money, especially in this property, because it is such a great course. We have a great superintendent, I have nothing but positive things to say about American Golf, and it's very affordable, like you said. It's $40 during the week to ride. It's $62 on the weekend to ride. If you're 55 and older, Monday through Friday is $29 to ride. We have great Twilight specials after 3 o'clock as well. So it's just it's a great experience out here at Franklin Canyon.
4 hour round, 4.5?
Typically during the mornings, during the week is 4 hours to 4.5. The weekends, it gets a little dicey in the afternoons. It gets up a little towards 5, but we've got a pretty active ambassador program that's out there kind of getting people going. But, you know, it's a beautiful setting to spend 4 to 5 hours a day.
Active ambassador or ambassadors that are active? I mean, this is not Marshalls, right? These are what your new name for Marshalls?
Correct. Ambassadors. They don't wear a badge.
They don't carry guns.
No. Some of them like to think that, but I've tried to change that a little bit around here where they're helping you with the yardages. They're help looking for your balls. They're raking the bunkers for you, forecatting for you, just to kind of help you speed up your round and make it more enjoyable for everyone else behind you if there's a slow group.
Now let's talk about one of the reasons I'm out here today is to look at different GPS systems mm-hmm. and yardage markers. What do you guys provide GPS systems on your golf carts?
We do not. They are very expensive to provide for a golf facility. I'm kind of an old school guy. My background is private clubs, so I grew up a caddy. So that's kind of what my thoughts on it. You know, I wish I could implement a GPS. Unfortunately, people think that you play faster with GPS systems, but it tends that people kind of analyze a shot more and try to get exactly what they want to do. And they spend a little more time picking out clubs and that kind of stuff with a GPS program. So what I found is it actually slows up your round with the real nice, the pictures that are like attached to the golf cart. The handheld ones are great because you can just go walk right to your spot and go boom, okay, 157, I can pull my 8-iron or whatever. But that's been my experience with the real nice setups that are attached to the golf cart. So the full color picture, people kind of get caught up in looking at that and perusing through all that, whereas like the Sky Caddy and that kind of stuff is right, it just gives you the yardage and that's all you have and you just go with it.
So do you think that the handheld units improve the pace of play more than the ones on the golf carts?
Definitely, because when you're sitting right at your spot, you don't have to go pace it off from the 150 marker or try to find a sprinkler head. You just hit the button, click, there's your yardage. You know exactly where to go, and to the pin, to the bunker, and all that is right there in front of you. So it does take time to pace from... You know, it's difficult to find sprinkler heads. Sometimes if you're in the rough, if you don't hit the fairway, to find that sprinkler head, to walk it off, then find your club. But with the Sky Caddy and the ones like that, it definitely speeds up play.
And the one we're testing today with the iGolf for the smartphone. Tell me how your course is marked off. And if you are comfortable with that, or if you could make a change, what you would do?
Our golf course is just has the... like the 200-yard marker, the 150, and the 100. And none of the sprinkler heads are marked, so it would definitely help to have like the smartphone or the Sky Caddy out here when you play. I would love to have our sprinkler heads marked, just or even have poles for the yardages on the cart paths or somewhere, just so it's a little easier to find kind of where you're sitting, how far from the green. So my ultimate goal would be to have the sprinkler heads marked. If not, maybe... we could purchase a bunch of the smartphones or those little apparatus where you could almost like rent them out for the round here and charge people for that. But since I've been here, we just put a pin placement chart in. So now we have that where the superintendent and I have got together and kind of figured out the rotation of the pins. And now there's a pin placement chart on every cart. So you know exactly where the pin is. Now it's just trying to figure out the yardage to hit it to that pin. So,
and that's a big help too.
Definitely. You know, sometimes, you know, if you're hitting uphill, you can't exactly see where the pin is. And so it's a big help to kind of get your quad into the green and where you're going to aim for and hopefully hit it there.
Do you have experience with the range finders like Bushnell?
I do. Those seem to work very well as well. They are kind of expensive for the models, but the ones that are really good are the ones that have the laser link is the one I'm thinking of, where they you have the actual apparatus on the flag that bounces back the yardage. So that's those work very well. The Bushnell ones are tough because sometimes you catch like a tree like behind the green, or you catch something else that is trying to figure out exactly what you're aiming for, and not everybody has super steady hands like a sniper shooter, so it's tough to get the exact spot they're aiming for. But They're all great tools, and it's unbelievable that the USGA is allowing them in play now, especially their championships and stuff like that. And it's great for the game for sure.
On your golf course here at Franklin Canyon, you have elevation changes, so you're hitting up to holes numerous times. Is a rangefinder have affected by that? If you can't see the flag or you can't see the base of the flag?
Exactly, a rangefinder is definitely affected by that because it doesn't take into an account the elevation change. And you know, simple math says if you're below the pin and hitting to an uphill, that just gives you a straight line. You know, that's just it doesn't account the carry and the wind and stuff like that that you have to judge. So the GPS systems seem to work the best, where if you're just standing in exactly your spot, it's boom, it's your yardage, and then you can figure it in. People kind of forget about the elevation changes with the Bushnell and that kind of stuff, where it doesn't take into account downhill, uphill to the pin, and then how far it is from the, you know, to carry over the bunker or just pass the pin or whatever. So I've seen people struggle with the Bushnells for sure.
Little love from me here. I'm about to go out. Tell me, what's the most common mistake you see on this golf course?
The most common mistake I would see on this golf course is probably hitting into a tree. Not that it's tree-lined, but there are some, you know, big trees near the edge of the fairway into the rough that people kind of struggle with. So I hope you hit every fairway, but just in case, you should have a punch shot available in your arsenal out there.
Yeah, so that would be the question. If with that kind of mistake that's made, how do you correct it? What do you use to improve that and get out of it?
Well, for a long time, I carried a 3-iron in my bag, and I figured out that the only time I was using it was when I was punching out of the trees. So I put the 3-iron away. The hybrids have been an amazing technology for the golf industry. I kind of equate it to the parabolic skis in the ski industry, where it is just so unbelievably easy to hit a long iron with the hybrid clubs, especially when people struggle with the long bunker shots. If you don't have a big lip to go over, don't be afraid to pull that hybrid out and hit it out of the long bunker shots. They get up right away, and you get a lot of distance. Even if you kind of hit it off center, it really carries, whereas with the old 3-irons and 2-irons, you know, look like butter knives, and it was tough to get some good wood on them. But normally what I do is I take a 4-iron, you know, put it back in my stance, and just kind of take a little half swing. You know, people tend to get caught up, and they really got to whack at it from in there, and then that they hit down on the ball, which when you hit down on the ball, it forces the ball up, and then you end up hitting the same tree that you just probably hit on your drive. So you just kind of take a little half swing, just get it out, just get it going towards the hole, and, you know, hopefully you have a good wedge in your hand where you can get up and down for an easy par, but sometimes you just have to take your medicine when you hit it offline.
Now I'm real curious, how many hybrids do you carry in your bag?
I have two hybrids. I have a 22 and a 24, so it's kind of like a 5-wood-ish or 2-iron, and then also the 3-iron replacement one. So I absolutely love them, you know, tight fairways or tight driving holes. You know, I pull those out and just hit it off the tee. I try to, you know, emulate Tiger's stinger, but I'm not that good. But they are very accurate for me, which is nice, so I can kind of make sure that I end up in the fairway and have a great look at the green.
So what clubs did you pull out of your bag to put the hybrids in?
I pulled my 2 and 3 iron out, which
you don't miss them?
Not at all. They're sitting in my garage with a nice little dust area around them. My 2 iron just looked like a butter knife to me. Whenever I put it down, I'm just trying to figure out where the sweet spot was, and these hybrids are just amazing now.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And let's go out and see what happens on the course.
Absolutely. Have a great day out there. It's a beautiful day today.
All right. Well, it's the next morning after the round of golf, and I thought I'd do a little overview for you, reviewing the iGolf SD card that went into my Trio smartphone versus the Sky Caddy, which I was carrying, the SG2. I did find that on this course, their yardage was fairly close to one another, only a couple yards off on the SD card. And I confirmed with another person who happened to be using a Sky Caddy that the Sky Caddy was more accurate. And I compared on a couple holes to him, and it just seemed that Sky Caddy was closer. Maybe they were seeing the same satellite. I don't know how that works. But they're also very different in the sense of how much maintenance they require from one another during the round. The Sky Caddy, you can walk up to your ball, see what the length of the shot will be to your next to the green or wherever you're going. But on the SD card, you can keep your score, you can keep your partner's score, you can keep the length of every shot, you can tell it which clubs you used. There's a lot you can do with it, but you need to keep going back to your smartphone, which is okay if you want to keep that much information. I tend not to. Maybe I should. I'll get better if I do. But the other part about that was I received 2 phone calls during my round of golf. I had to take them both. They were from a client. And what ended up happening at the end of the second phone call, we were on the 10th hole, and the battery died. So I wasn't able to keep score anymore on my SD card on the iGolf. So it depends what you're looking for. They both work. And depends if you just want to know the distance of your shot or if you want to keep a lot of statistics in your round. So that's my review on comparing the iGolf SD GPS versus the SkyCaddy SG2. And with that, let's go to the expert. It's time to ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, technical specialist at EdwinWattsGolf.com, would like to help. If we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf Hat. To submit your question, go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Hi, Kenny.
Hey, Fred. How you doing?
I'm doing really well, and I appreciate you spending time with us once again because you always have something informative to tell us.
It's always a pleasure. Hey, did you watch the PGA this weekend?
Oh.
A little.
It
was a major, Fred.
I know. I got to see the last two holes on Sunday.
Yeah, I actually sat down and watched quite a bit of it on Sunday and enjoyed the heck out of it. It was exciting, to say the least.
Well, it's, you know, when Tiger's in the hunt, it's must-see TV.
Yeah, it really is, and to have Woody and Ernie put the pressure on like they did made it that much more enjoyable.
Yeah. So you want to make a prediction of when Tiger's going to pass Nicholas?
Oh, man, let's see. There's four majors a year. He's five back. Realistically, I think you're probably looking at least 5 years.
Really?
If he wins one a year, he says it's a successful year.
Right.
You take all the intangibles that come into play with golf, and you finish second at the Masters, second at the Open. It's hard. I would say, 5 to 7 years maybe.
Do you think that he's reached his prime yet?
No, I don't think so. What they say, golf reaches your prime at about 35.
And so that's four more years away. So he could, he sets the goal of one per year, but he could win more than that.
He could at one time. What he won, he had all four at one time.
Well, right. He had the Tiger Slam.
It was a 2-year period, but he had all four major trophies at one time. So,
right.
It's just really hard to say.
Yeah. Well, sure.
It's going to be exciting to watch.
It's very exciting. It's very exciting to be a spectator at this point, in history, because truly it is history.
And
I don't know if you remember when Muhammad Ali was at his prime, but I do, and that was so much fun. Hey, Michael Jordan at his prime, but Michael Jordan and Muhammad Ali, although they were the top of their game, completely different beasts, because Muhammad Ali was a world figure, as Tiger Woods is a world figure. You know, I see that comparison to be more analogous in that sense.
I would have to agree. I mean, you look at tennis, Roger Federer, Barry Bonds breaking the home run record. I mean, there's a lot that's going on right now in sports that, it doesn't happen the way that it is in every generation.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up the Barry Bonds breaking the home run. I don't know if you heard our Radio Baseball Cards podcast last week, but it was an interview with Barry Bonds just after his rookie season. And the day we published it, that night, he hit the home run. So if you haven't heard Radio Baseball Cards with Barry Bonds, you should definitely go check it out, because he's very young and very animated, and it's a very different presentation than what you get in 2007.
I'm sure.
It's really interesting. Well, Kenny, we have a lot of time today, which is good, because we have a lot of questions that have come in. I've got 7 pages of questions. We can't obviously do all of them. We appreciate everyone writing, and we encourage you to continue to write and send in questions. So let's see if we can get short answers on these and move on so we can get as much as possible, okay?
That sounds good.
Okay. This question comes from Kendall Hall in Bakersfield, California. His question is about 3-woods versus drivers. He says, I'm a high handicap golfer. I only play once a month or so and usually score about 100. I'm currently using my 3-wood off the tee box because I have a bad tendency to slice my driver into the rough or out of play. The 3-wood, however, I hit a good 200 to 220 and hit most fairways. I'm wondering if a high-lofted driver like the Cleveland Hybor XL, which comes in a 16-degree, or just an offset driver like the Cobra LD Offset M-Speed would help, or should I stick with what works?
What you have, anytime you increase loft, you increase playability. What I mean by that is if you have a 10.5-degree driver that you're slicing really bad, if you increase the loft on that to 12 or even 16 degrees, you're going to increase the playability of that golf club, take a little bit of the spin out of it. So it's a good question, because what you find with high handicap players is the majority of the time they can hit the 3-wood and play a lot more than they can a driver. But if you look at the PGA Tour as well, these guys are doing the same thing. They're hitting 3-wood because they know that they can keep it in play more. So if he goes with a driver that has the same loft as his 3-wood, typically a 3-wood is going to be 15 or 16 degrees. And if he goes with that high loft, 16 degree on that particular Cleveland driver, what you get is you get a shaft that's going to be an inch to an inch and a half longer, so you are going to increase club head speed. So you're going to hit that club farther than you are the 3-wood, and the chances are that he should hit that club in play more than a typical driver. So I would definitely say yes, give it a try, but you do need to go with what works for you. No guarantees that it's going to work, but the probabilities are higher that he's going to hit that driver better than he is a driver with a lower loft.
Excellent answer, and I think there's a lot of people who heard that going, that's a strong possibility. All right, let's move on. This question comes from William Rinaldi of Roseland, New Jersey, and he says, "Hey, Kenny, I was wondering, why is it that over the years the size of the club head on the driver has gotten so much bigger while the size of the club head on a set of irons hasn't changed much? Wouldn't bigger iron club heads make sense?"
It has to do with material. The driver, they use titanium, which is a lot lighter than it is with stainless steel. There's not a lot of titanium-headed golf clubs out there. At one time, there were several companies that made an all-titanium club head, and they had inserted tungsten, which is a very heavy metal, to increase the swing weight. The problem is it creates a lot of drag on an iron. With a driver, you're not taking a divot like you are with an iron. So, and it looked kind of, it looked different, I'll just put it that way, seeing an iron that was really, really big. If you ever bought your kid a set of plastic golf clubs that had a real big head on the bottom of it, you know what I'm talking about. So, but they're using tons of different stainless in iron heads. Some have titanium face on a stainless steel body, which helps increase ball speed. So I don't see iron heads changing that drastically as far as size-wise go. What they do there is try to increase moment of inertia by adding weights on the heel and the toe of the golf club and doing different things with the face of the golf club, whether they use titanium or a different softer metal to increase playability. What they look for is increased sweet spot, off-center hits, things like that on irons. Drivers have reached their max at 460 cc's, so they're as big as they're going to get. Iron-wise, I don't know if big is better.
So is part of the answer to that hybrids? I mean, because a lot of people are replacing their irons with hybrids, and those are bigger than the club head face of an iron.
Yeah, that's where you've seen technology change. You know, somebody that struggles with an iron, obviously a hybrid is the way to go. And if anything, in irons, that's where technology has moved them to.
Okay. And for those of you who have not yet heard the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast, part two of our conversation with John K. Solheim of Ping on hybrids, the show is up and running. I did get some emails saying that they were having difficulty downloading the podcast from iTunes, but it all has been corrected, and you can now find Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf podcast, all about equipment and technology, and all five episodes are up in iTunes, and our artwork is up there too, Kenny. They got that corrected, so please check out that show.
I, as well as others, were very happy about that.
Others in your office, I'm sure. Here's a question from Ken Schreck in Clinton Township, Michigan. I'm about to replace the grips on my clubs. I plan on using wind grips. The question I have is, does the firmness of the grip have any effect on the swing, or is it only a matter of preference?
It doesn't have anything to do with the swing. It has to do with personal preference. A thinner grip, obviously, you're going to be able to feel miss hits better. What I mean by that, you can feel vibration in the grip more than you can on a grip that's bigger and bulkier and softer. So grips are definitely personal preference. Wynn makes a great product line. There's others out there as well. And Wynn makes a plethora of grips that are available, whether it be thinner, softer, bigger, smaller, whatever you want. But grips are definitely personal preference. The thinner the grip you get, the more you're going to be able to feel impact.
Is that the answer? Or are we done?
That is the answer.
Okay. Then let's move on to the next one. This one's from Ed Mikus in Larchmont, New York. And he had a simple question about using a wedge. Is it better to use a wedge with more or less bounce in a bunker where the sand is densely packed, such as when it's wet?
Anytime we talk about bunkers, we always talk about increasing the bounce because you do not want the club head to dig into the sand and hit the ball fat. And typically that's what happens. If you play a golf course that has compact bunkers where it's fairly hard, then you can obviously decrease the bounce on the golf club. But here where we're at in Florida, where they use basically white sand, kind of typical to beach sand or what have you, it's very soft. And even if it does get wet, it doesn't compact the sand as much. So you still want to use something with more bounce. Anytime you increase bounce, you increase forgiveness. So if you play a real soft fairway or bunkers, the easy answer there is yes, definitely play something that has more bounce to it. Because if you play something with less bounce, it's like a butter knife going through the sand, and you're going to get a lot of sand and not a lot of golf ball.
Okay, very good. Now, the next one comes from Interlaken, Michigan. This is Paul Molnar, and he asks, how do I know if I'm hitting a particular club the correct distance? Is there a targeted distance that the various clubs are designed to be hit?
No, absolutely not. I mean, everybody's going to be different. There's no standard out there that says, hey, you're supposed to hit a 9-iron, 145 yards, and then you go out there and you try to hit a 9-iron 145 yards, and it might be an absolute full swing for somebody, or it might be a three-quarter swing for somebody else. What you have to do is go out there and find out exactly what yardage you hit your golf clubs and be satisfied with that, and don't try to overswing or choke down and hit a three-quarter club a certain yardage, because it's not going to work for you. You have to be able to take a fluid golf swing, know exactly how far you're going to hit each golf club. How many people out there know that if they hit a 9-iron full and good, exactly how far it's going to go? I'm just telling you, the majority of the people out there do not know how far they hit each golf club. It's pretty much a random guess. Hey, I'm 155 yards. I'm going to pull an 8-iron here. When in actuality, you might hit that club 150 or 160. So it's good to know how far you hit each golf club. But there is definitely no standard out there, because no two golf swings are the same.
Thank you. I played golf with a guy just a week or two ago. It's my son's dad's friend. I'm my son's dad. It's my son's friend's dad, and the four of us went out and played. And this guy's been playing golf all his life. He doesn't really see any need for strategy. He's a grip it and rip it kind of guy. And myself, I have a very different philosophy and approach in the way I play a hole. You know, I'll stand at the tee box and I'll look at it and try to position where I'm going to go for each shot. And he just likes hit the ball. So we come to a par three, and he hits the ball and he greens it, right? And I said to him, what yardage did you play? And he said, I hit a wedge. I said, I understand that. What yardage did you play that shot? Because we probably don't hit our clubs the same distance. And he said, no, I just hit a wedge. And I'm like, yeah, I got that point.
Yeah, so some people are feel golfers.
Yeah.
I mean, they look at a target and they basically feel what club they need to hit. You know, I don't advise that, you know, but just because being able to go out there and figure out what you hit yardage-wise each club takes a little bit of time, and it's hard to do on a driving range. Hey, everybody, can you stop so I can run out here and see how far I hit that club? You know, it's difficult to be able to find out, but it would be great while you're out there playing on a slow day sometime, and whether you're by yourself or something, try to figure out, especially the shorter irons, 7, 8, 9 wedge and sand wedge, how far do you hit those golf clubs? It's vital to know, because, you know, you can translate that on the golf course, you know, hey, if I hit this 9-iron perfect, I know I'm going to hit it 145 yards. I've got 144 yards to the pin or what have you. I mean, you know you can hit that club full and get it there and hopefully be close to the pin.
I mean, to me, if you don't know how far you're hitting your clubs, how can you possibly try to lower your scores?
Exactly. I agree 100%.
It's one of the more basic things. And then, you know, again, playing with my son, who's just become a new fan of the game, he'd rather go out and play. He doesn't want to practice. And when he practices, it's all about making contact with the ball, but not how far he's hitting each club. And I'm like, he says, what club should I hit here? I said, I don't know. How far do you hit that club? And he said, I don't know. I said, well, then how can I answer the question? You know, it's a very difficult thing. But really, you should, most driving ranges have yardage markers out there. You know, like there's a target here, a target there, a target there. Just try to hit to that target and see which club hits the most comfortable, right?
Yeah, you can get an educated guess. Problem is, you know, a lot of times they move the ropes on the hitting area, so it's not a true target. If some courses that have a sign up, you know, hey, the white flag today is 150 yards or what have you. But, yeah, I mean, you need to come close. Let's just put it that way. You need to have an educated guess as to how far you're going to hit it. If you don't, it's you're guessing, and the chances are you're not scoring very well when you're out there. And if you do find out exactly what you hit each golf club, you're going to score better. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I have a 52-degree wedge in my bag that I know I hit 92 yards. And so when I see that I'm you know, 89 to 95 yards from the pin, my confidence level skyrockets. I feel like I'm going to nail this one, and I generally do because of the confidence that I have in that club and my ability to hit that club.
Hey, perfect. Here's a perfect example. You're 250 yards out on a par 5. Do you hit 3-wood 200 yards and leave yourself 50 yards into the green, which is a very difficult shot for a lot of people, or do you play to a certain yardage? Hey, I'm going to hit this 250-yard shot. I'm going to hit it 150 yards, leave myself 100 yards, which is a full sand wedge. The chances of hitting a full sand wedge on the green versus a 50-yard sand wedge on the green are probably a lot greater for most out there. So that's where knowing what you hit yardage-wise comes into play there. You know, you don't always have to say, okay, if you're 250 yards out, I'm going to hit this 3-wood up there 200 to 230 yards and leave myself a difficult chip, or do you play to a certain yardage? And I'm going to tell you right now, the best thing to do there is to play to a certain yardage, a yardage that you feel comfortable with. If you hit your 9-iron, if 9-iron's the best club in your bag, you know, hit a wedge up there 130 yards and leave yourself a good 9-iron.
That's,
you know,
absolutely,
you got to know what your strengths are.
Yeah, that's absolutely the best lesson that I ever received on the course from a friend of mine. We were playing a par 5, and we were about, like you said, 250 yards out, and even probably a little farther. And he said, "What is your favorite club in your bag?" And I said, "Well, right to this week, probably my 8-iron." He goes, "Well, how far do you hit it?" And I'm like, 135 yards." He goes, "Then get your ball to 135 yards to your next shot, to your approach shot. Don't try to hit it as far as you can. Just get it to the place where you're the most comfortable." And I think that's where the term golf smarter comes from.
You're exactly correct. That definitely is golfing smarter.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well, I'm glad we agree on that. Let's move on to the next one, because this one comes from Jan Tkach in Montreal, Canada. Thank you, Jan, for giving me the pronunciation guide on that. I would have brutalized it. And he says, "Hey, Fred, I have a Cleveland Launcher 10.5 degree that I've been using for about 3 to 4 years now. I play 30 to 50 rounds a year. Is it possible that the face of the driver has lost its spring effect and I'm losing yards? Have you ever heard of this happening? Or is my 10 to 30 yard average loss more about the player and not the club? Or is it something else like the shaft? Please tell me it's not the fact that I'm getting older and that my 21-month-old is slowly sucking the life out of me."
Bad news is that's the answer. That's the answer. You're
it's
getting older. You've got a child. You're probably not going to get to play as much. The chances of losing spring-like effect in a golf club are fairly slim. Shaft-wise, you know, people tend to say sometimes, hey, shafts lose some of their flexibility or torque or what have you, and that could be a determining factor. But chances are it does come down to you know, age-wise. But the good news is what you need to do is get fit for whatever your swing speed is now. Over time, obviously, your swing speed tends to slow. It's not what it once was. So if you're playing a stiff shaft now and you need to be in regular, then you're going to definitely lose yardage. So I would look at, with all the new technology that's out now, with higher launch drivers, with lower spin, and getting the right shaft for your swing, we can gain back some of that yardage that you've lost. Absolutely.
Yeah, and start stretching, dude. Increase your flexibility. You know, it's going to be better for you in the long run because the kid is sucking life out of you. There's no question about it.
Flexibility.
Golf fitter. Okay. And the last one for this show will be from Boone, North Carolina. And this is Tad Dolbier. And you know what? If Tad was from Montreal, Canada, like Jan was, it would be Tad Dolbier. But this is North Carolina, so my guess is it's Tad Dolbier. His question is, what determines when a golfer should consider moving to graphite shafts in hybrids and irons? Is it simply swing speed, or are there other considerations?
No, I mean, there's a couple of different considerations. Graphite shaft dampens vibration. So somebody that has tennis elbow or shoulders that are sore, what have you, graphite can eliminate a lot of the vibration that comes up through the shaft. That's one consideration. The other is age and swing speed. As we get older, our swing speed tends to slow. So with graphite shafts, they're able to make the shaft typically half to three-quarters of an inch longer than they can with steel. So what you do is you obviously increase club head speed with a longer shaft. If you have a 6-iron that's 38.5 inches versus a 6-iron that's 39 inches, you're going to hit the one that's 39 inches further. You should, because you've increased club head speed. So I would look at what the swing speed is. If it's anywhere from 70 to 75 miles an hour, now's a good time to start looking at graphite shafts in your irons. It will definitely help generate more club head speed and get you to hit the ball a little bit further as well.
And one more thing that's going to help you increase your club head speed is a speed stick training aid, correct?
That is correct.
And that's why we're giving one away. Oh, what a good segue that was.
That was a good plug.
Thank you very much. Next week is we're going to announce the winner of a speed stick training aid, and the deadline for entries is August 20th, 2007. We'll announce it on the show of August 21st. If you'd like to enter to win the speed stick training aid, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest, and that's just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once you're there, just fill out the shipping information and the verification code, click submit, and you have entered the contest. You only need to enter once per email address, please, because I'm going to just eliminate all the other ones anyway. And if you'd also like to do some shopping and purchase your own speed stick because you're concerned that you may not win, why don't you just wait a week and find out? But then go ahead and buy one. Go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the Edwin Watts Golf banner, and you can learn how you can receive 10% off all your purchases and receive free shipping as well from Edwin Watts Golf. We truly appreciate their support in this podcast. And any podcast that they support, we hope you support as well.
Absolutely. We definitely appreciate it. And also, hey, just a little heads up, I'm going to go demo some of the new Ping G10 products, which are coming out September 1. I'm going to demo some of those later this week. So hopefully next week we'll be able to give a good product review on some of those.
And maybe give something away.
That might not be a plug for it, but we'll see.
All right. Pressure's on, Kenny. All right, buddy. Well, it was great to talk to you. Thanks so much for giving the time today.
You too, Fred. Thanks a million.
And I'd also like to thank the folks at L1 Technologies for allowing us to test the new iGolf SD GPS package. And this week's guest, Matt Anderson, for allowing us to use his course to be the guinea pig on the experiment. I want to remind you of the exclusive offer for Golf Smarter listeners from fitness trainer Bobby Kelly. Bobby's produced a 3-DVD set for golfers that covers core, flexibility, balance, and strength. All necessary elements to increase your distance and lower your scores. The DVD set is called Building Your A Game. Regularly, the box set sells for $97, but Bobby has offered Golf Smarter listeners the chance to get the complete set for only $69 for a limited time. To take advantage of this generous offer, please go to buildingyouragame.com for all the details. Act now, because this offer expires September 4th, 2007, and then the price will go back up to $97. That's buildingyouragame.com. I'd also like your input. If you think that an ongoing golf fitness podcast would be a valuable complement to Golf Smarter and Golf Better, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com to share your thoughts. And while you're there, check out the other programs we offer for smarterpodcasts.com, and we'll play a promo for one at the end of today's show. This week's quote is submitted by Jeffrey Malone of Bethesda, Maryland, who will receive golf's newest product, Windage, branded with the Golf Smarter logo. Based on my experience, Windage will bring a smile to the rest of your playing partners and will quickly and easily reveal wind patterns. Kind of like a cigar, but you can see it better. Check them out at playthewind.com. Jeff says he's about a 40 handicap and usually plays only in corporate-sponsored outings. He said that the Golf Smarter podcast is teaching him more than he knows what to do with, and he does have an instructor, so there's clearly some pride involved in his game. He writes that the best quote came from his instructor last week when he was quizzing him about whether he can tee up in the fairway to be able to hit the shot. The instructor said, "Do whatever you want as long as you're having fun." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
It's hybrid month at smarterpodcasts.com. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, proud new owner of a Prius car. We've got Fred and Kenny talking about hybrid golf clubs on Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. And on Good Dog, the Good Dog Podcast, we're talking about hybrid dogs. So check us out at gooddogpodcast.com.